Teresa Walker, Associated Press, at Teresa M. Walker on Twitter, joins us every Monday morning hereabouts. Good morning, Teresa. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. Had a good weekend. Wow. Chargers, what, from the 1 foot line, three tries, two gets in, turned over, the last one, fumble, and Titans get out of there with a win, 23-20.
An absolutely amazing finish. Now, I've been there for all but one home game since they moved into that stadium. And Music City Miracle was an amazing finish. Absolutely one of I think it was voted the fourth best play in the NFL's 100 years. Reminded me of I think it was a Monday night game against the Ravens when Steve McNair was kind of stopped. They thought they'd scored, and Siragusa, you know, wasn't onside and gave gave the Ravens a second try to make a stop. But guys, let's face it, when they were stopped on the fourth and inches, and they, you know, and Rivers, I mean, shoot, he thrown the 41-yard touchdown a few minutes before, and he throws that one to Eckler, and I thought that, okay, let's see how much time what are the timeouts, what's the time left, can the Titans go down and win this game? And to see what they did, I mean, not one, not two, but three times the replay official had to go and help them. Now, if you were in the stadium, you know, we're all trying to figure out what are the officials doing, what's going on. But talking to folks who watched the game on TV made it very clear that you could see that ball coming out. And as Mike Vrabel put it later, by the grace of God, they get that win. And I'm very curious now, that's the kind of thing that can turn a season. You know, obviously the Titans have nine more games left to do something with this, but I'm very curious now to see what they do, having survived literally by the blades of a few, pieces of grass.
That is a great point, and we've talked a lot about this game today, but individually, Jeffrey Simmons coming back, gets the sack on Phillip Rivers, and I've been watching that last series from the goal line. He just destroyed the Chargers, that right side of the line, which made Gordon go outside and just enough to strip the ball. What a great performance by Jeffrey Simmons yesterday.
Astounding. And guys, let's face it, there's a lot of people who are like, no, just keep it in bubble wrap, 2020 will be fine, don't want a setback. But the Titans have been cautious with him. You know, they never put a timetable on when he would be back. It was when he's ready to play and he's cleared. And I thought maybe they'd ease him in 12 to 15 snaps. He played 21, a sack, couple tackles for loss, four tackles in all. And yes, he was a big piece of that stand there. And I mean, you look at him physically, he's just a huge dude. He makes Darrell Casey, who's not a thin guy, look almost small in comparison. So, there's a reason why they call him Big Jeff in that locker room. And, that we were all wondering, what might he bring to this team? Well, apparently he can bring an awful lot.
Well, not only that, but I mean that again. We've talked about going into the season. To me, the biggest concerns were quarterback and defensive line, and I'm glad I was only wrong on one of those. That defensive line, Teresa, and I've watched a lot of NFL this year. And I'm by no means an expert, but my goodness, that defensive line for the Titans—that's as good as any team in the National Football League.
It absolutely is. And now you've added this piece to it. Now, they're banged up at outside back without a doubt. But, Harold Landry is, performing. Shoot, he has already doubled, through at this point of the season, the number of sacks that, Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan had, combined last year. They had two. Well, he's got four and is a half sack from a career high with, nine games left this season. So now, Cam Wake's back now. You would expect him and hope that, he gets, a little bit better coming off the hamstring that cost him two games. So, adding Jeff Simmons to the middle of that line is, I know that the joke last week was, can he play offensive line? Well, guess what? We saw yesterday what happens when you can add a piece like that to a defense that's already among the NFL's best this year.
Teresa Walker with us, Associated Press, at Teresa M. Walker. Oh, by the way, let's mention this. Congratulations. Inducted into the Tennessee Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame.
Well, thank you, Greg. Selected. The induction.
Selected. That's right. Well, selected. Yeah. Inducted later. But, hey, congratulations.
I appreciate that very much. Joe Rexroth has been joking about the receiving line for the, you know, since last Thursday's news came out. But I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been sending me great wishes. I appreciate it so much.
Well, not only that, but my goodness, the Predators Fang Vision, whatever that giant scoreboard, they put your name up there. That's pretty solid.
It is. You haven't seen my social media. That's my new cover photo on Twitter, Facebook.
Oh, that's where I saw it. I was like, good Lord.
It is nice. It is appreciated. You know, what can I say? Sometimes it's nice to be the person who sticks around for a long time. But then again, you know, I've also tried to, you know, I don't have hot takes. I just try to tell the story down the middle and be objective. And, you know, it seems like people like that. So I'm very thankful.
Yeah. There you go. I'm looking at it right now. Anybody wants to go check it out? Teresa M. Walker up on the Jumbotron at Bridgestone Arena. Congratulations to Teresa Walker, TSWA. Hall of Fame class of 2020. So well deserved, Teresa.
Thank you so much, Greg.
And all right, you want to stick with the Titans? You want to move around a little bit?
Well, we could talk about Derek Mason's rather emphatic defense of him being the best coach, man for the coach of Vanderbilt Commodores. My only question would be to Derek. It's like, okay, maybe, you know, yes, we all know that September was a tough start. The first three games were a little bit of a murderer's row. But, you know, he has shown in his six, you know, five seasons that he can get a team better in the final half of the year. At a certain point, you got to get better at identifying and putting those pieces together faster, say, in September and early October. But that was absolutely a big, big win. First time they've beaten an SEC-ranked team since, well, Tennessee, when Tennessee was 24. So there you go.
You know, and Mo Hassan started out his college at Syracuse, came here from Coffeyville Community College, the JUCO route. I heard somebody on the radio today say he didn't go JUCO. No, he did. It's sort of a surprise with Riley Neal and Deuce Wallace that they go with Mo Hassan.
Well, Greg, I'll say this. The surprise is because when we kept asking, everyone was asking about quarterback last week because it was obvious that Neal and Wallace, you know, for all we heard in August, you know, this was a tight competition. Well, now we know why. You know, they had a hard time separating from each other, and it just wasn't that great. You know, Hassan may not be awesome, but that intangible that he brings, plus he's able to run. We saw him make some nice throws, and he ran at the right time. Joe Rexroth, I'm going to give him credit. As soon as Hassan went to the sideline, he said, how long does it take Riley Neal to throw a pick six? Well, it wasn't a pick six, but it was an interception, and it set up a quick touchdown. And it was nice to see the Commodores respond with Neal in a quarterback to go down and get the touchdown to win that game. But, you know, and now the Vanderbilt Commodores have a whole off week for Hassan to heal up. Sure seems like he's the guy moving forward, if nothing else, because he provided some of that je ne sais quoi, that energy that obviously they've been missing.
You know, and get the win. It's just, it's so frustrating. I'm a Vanderbilt fan. I'm so frustrated because that performance at UNLV, that's all on Derek Mason. That's all his fault. They came out and the guy beat 34-10. But now this week, you go out and beat Missouri. That's all Derek Mason because the guys are playing for it and he got the team fired up. So the 50-50 here, being a Vanderbilt football fan, would drive me insane.
Well, and Joe, here's the thing. You know, there were some different pieces on the field on Saturday. Well, why not make those changes after the Ole Miss game?
Yes.
Because are you looking at the, you know, looking at what you're seeing and saying, okay, if we just practice better this week, this will work better? At a certain point, you're banging your head on the wall, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Now, it set yourself up where you sit there 2-5. You could, you know, knock yourself in the head all day long thinking we should be 4-3. But now you got five games left. You split one with South Carolina, Florida. You got three winnable games towards the end. You could ride the season out at 6-6. And then you've got some build momentum going into the next year. But we got to see this next Saturday against South Carolina, because you go out and you play against UNLV and you finish the season at 2-10. Then what have you got? Well, sell me the program for 2020. You can't. So this is a crucial 2 weeks for Derek Mason.
Crucial 2 weeks, and I'll say this. You know, if he can pull this out and you can go 6-6, be bowl eligible, that's wonderful. But at a certain point, He's going to have to show that they can make the coaching decisions. And I like Derek, but you're going to have to show you can make the coaching decisions in March into August and before your opener in September to have this team ready to go at the start of the season. Now, obviously, college sports, these are young men. He keeps making the point these are 18 to 22-year-olds. And, Lord, I got a 20-year-old. I understand. You know, it's like herding cats. But he's the coach. He's the guy getting the big money to get the pieces in the right place at the right time. And, you know, when the games are winnable in September, he's going to have to start showing he can get those games into the win column faster than what has been happening.
Teresa Walker, Associated Press, Teresa M. Walker on Twitter, Alabama 35-13 over UT, and a lot of conversation about Garantano when he come in and went rogue and dropped the ball, put it on the ground, 100-yard fumble return, and you know, would they have won the game otherwise? Who knows, but it certainly made it interesting with it a one-possession game before that. And then as Garantano leaves the sideline, Jeremy Pruitt, of course we've seen it, puts his hands on the mask. He didn't drag him around like a dog. He didn't shake it. I have no problem with this whatsoever. But, of course, in this day and age, all of the holy high rollers are on their high horse about it. It's amazing how people can comment on these things from far away. But anyway, your thoughts.
Well, I've talked to a couple of older football players who, would not have liked that. And I've seen some take that at a certain point, a coach is going to do that and probably get a reaction from a player that gets both of them into serious trouble. And as somebody has pointed out to me this morning, Pruitt's got to know the TV cameras are on him. And let's face it, we know that, that was a huge sign that the relationship between Pruitt and Garantano is not good, and I don't think couples counseling is going to fix that. So, coaches have to know. This is, Woody Hayes' day was a long time ago, but
this wasn't Woody. This is not even close to Woody Hayes.
I know, Greg. Give me a second here, but this wasn't grab the whole face mask and shake his head. He put his finger in there to kind of get his attention and caught part of the face mask. To me, yes, it was fairly. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. But again, I'm not the player, and you hear all these reports out of Knoxville. It sounds like he. Garantano ran the wrong play. I understand the emotions of the moment, but one of these days, it just seems like we're going to get something far more out of a moment like that, and then it's going to get, talk about frying pan to the fire, that's when it'll happen.
I'm still waiting for Will Muschamp to absolutely eat a player's face when he loses his you-know-what or in the sideline. The spontaneous combustion where he just poofs, he disappears, he's so mad.
And the only thing is, he didn't even grab it, he just tugged it down a little bit.
Well, Teresa, the problem...
Once you touch that face mask is what the deal is.
I had the problem with writers like Pat Forty and a few other guys who said, that's the worst thing ever, so egregious. No, it was not. It was a tug in the face mask, and it just exploded to a story that it should not have been, because a lot of people nationally were reacting. Stan Verrett or Verrett, whoever they got from ESPN, started going at Tennessee fans about all this. It was just, it was a bad look all the way around. I get that, but still, it's not like, and we've had a few callers, Woody Hayes, like Greg said, it was nowhere near. Nobody was punched. He got a point across, but anyway, that's just the way it is for now. I mean, it's one of those things we could argue about it all day long, but in the end, who knows?
Joe and Greg, here's the thing. That face mask thing and the turnover there at the goal line takes all the attention off of what I thought was a truly egregious call in that game when Daryl Taylor is flagged for, he put both hands on the quarterback trying to get off the ground. I don't know how a defensive player, gets off a quarterback in that way, unless they're supposed to stop, drop, and roll off of.
Yeah, but Teresa, there was a little extra push there, and I think it was a bad. Yeah,
there was a quarterback on the announcing crew, and if a quarterback tells you they don't see that,
I don't see it either. I thought it was a terrible call. However, there was the push down that was not necessary. Plus, so whether you think it's a bad call or not, the mistake was made by the player to put it again in the position of it being a judgment call. And yeah, he pushed him a little bit. It wasn't much. It should have never been called. But you don't put yourself in that situation where that could be called.
Well, all I know is that
I'm with you,
that
Teresa.
Crew did not seem to have a good to, they just struggled that night. I was coming home from the Vandy game listening, and there were three holes called on one play on Tennessee, and Kessling said that, you know, there seemed to be a couple of those numbers listed that weren't even on the
Yeah, they weren't
field.
Even on the
The Juwan Jennings one where they call Wanya Morris, whatever his name is, for the hold. It was somebody else. There was a hold on the play. It just wasn't the guy they called out.
Right.
You know, officials don't imbue people with confidence in their jobs when they can't get the numbers right.
Let me ask you this. In the last question, I know we have to get to break. During the end of the game, you know, the winner of the game smokes cigars. We know that. The Tennessee-Alabama tradition. The winner smokes cigars. The ESPN crew was smoking cigars. Do you have a problem with that?
Here's the thing. I wouldn't do it because I'm too busy being a working journalist. You're a working journalist. ESPN, they pay the money to show those games. I've taken a lot of ethics classes. That doesn't seem like something I would be doing or most people would be doing.
And thank you.
You know, yeah.
I'm with you. It's not a good look. I just show the fans doing it, whoever else did it. I just was not a good look. I saw it. I'm thinking, I don't know. But that's me, and I'm usually wrong. So, all right. Thank you, Teresa.
Hey, Teresa. We'll talk to you next Monday morning. Thank you, and congratulations again.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Joe.
All right.